Today's December 28th, 2024. Current Bitcoin price is $94,342.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
How was your Christmas, Rick?
I was pretty good.
Did you spend some time with the fam, with the people that are important?
Yes.
Good. I put that on Twitter, too. I was like, or X, whatever you want to call it. I was like, people take a break from the charts. Just walk away from it. Focus on what's important during this time of year. Don't. The charts will be there when you come back.
Exactly. I mean, and then you'll watch your hopes and dreams kind of rise during Christmas Day as it approaches 100 grand again, and then gets rejected, and here we are. But you know, some people listen to you. I'm pretty sure, Hans.
Oh yeah, no, totally. And you know what? It was I talked to you before, but I ended up getting sick, so I didn't get to see the rise until afterwards. And I was like, oh, we almost got back up there, and then I was like, oh, we got rejected. So yeah, taking my own advice, that was kind of in between naps that I was taking while I was trying to get better. But so how are theoretical purchases looking?
Well, they were doing better last time. At last episode, we actually got rejected from 100,000, then down to 92, and made it all the way back up to 100. So things were still looking rosy. At 94,000, still not bad, but just not quite as good. The BIP1 purchase back in October of 2023, $3,000 would have netted you 0.0885 Bitcoin. And that $3,000 is now worth $8,349. It was almost $9,000 last episode, but still not too bad. Yeah. And by number two, we're profitable still. I mean, at the halving, April 19th, 2024, $1,000 would have netted you 0.015464 Bitcoin. And right now that's worth $1,476.
So, I mean, they're still both in profit. Not as good as they were, obviously, previously. I think when we had a stream there for a little while, was it two episodes ago, where they were looking really good, but I think those were our peaks.
Yeah, I think we actually recorded that previous time right as Bitcoin was topping 100,000 and hit 101 while we were live, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty insane. And then obviously, we saw the run up all the way up to 108,000 eventually, and then now we've kind of seen the rejection. And there's been a lot of, there's a lot of fear in the market right now. And I think it's with some good sense, but there was a couple things that we were trying to find, like stories wise. There's not a whole lot going on right now. I mean, the markets are kind of shut down. We did, took a look at the Farsight ETF flows just to kind of see how Bitcoin is actually trading right now during this current season. And honestly, everything was looking pretty solid up until we got to December 19th, right?
Right.
We started to see outflows happen. IBIT was a zero sum that day. So there was actually $671 million worth of outflows that day that took place in the ETF market. The 20th, we saw $72 million sell-off from IBIT, a total sell-off of $277 million that day. December 23rd, $31.7 million is what IBIT took in, but the market as a whole sold off $226 million. And then IBIT had a big negative outflow day of $188 million on Christmas Eve. And there was $338 million that was actually sold off that day altogether. So looks like day after Christmas, we started to see some positive inflows again of about $500 million. $475 million was bought up again by the ETFs, and it looks like we had a down day yesterday on the 27th. So but IBIT had that one big sell-off day. It doesn't really, I mean, that doesn't put a dent into compared to what they've been purchasing, but it has kind of hampered some of the progress that we saw with the ETFs themselves. And I think one of the things that's kind of interesting that we continue to kind of focus on the ETFs is that it's kind of a real-time measure of what the appetite is for Wall Street with Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think this is the main avenue that they're taking.
Yeah. The only other one, really, the only other horse in the race that really kind of compares to something like that would be MicroStrategy, right?
Well, they're buying the dip, or can you say?
Yeah, MicroStrategy bought another 5,262 Bitcoin and achieves a Bitcoin yield of 47.4% quarter to date and has 73.7% year to date. They now hold 444,262 Bitcoin. That's just the company. Who knows what Michael Saylor's doing on his own?
Well, I mean, that's where most of it is, but he's probably got something pretty up there as well, personally. Yeah. I mean, not 440,000, but...
He's probably got a pretty substantial little stash, but I mean, like, Jesus, man. 440,000. No. Yeah, that's insane.
No, he's basically just, he's tying his company completely to Bitcoin. I mean, there's, MicroStrategy is nothing else but a Bitcoin holding company.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And for, you know, it seems like there's a lot of sharks in the water swimming around and predicting his demise and all this other stuff, because MicroStrategy, their stock, I mean, it was hitting some crazy highs, and now it was falling below 300 here recently. I can't remember what it got up to. It was insane.
Yeah.
Per share. But yeah, even with the sharks coming, he's just taking the money and buying more Bitcoin. So yeah, it's interesting. He's putting it, he's betting everything. All the chips are going all in.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up their chart real quick. I just kind of want to see. And it is kind of crazy because I think most people are just like, they can't do this. And because I think you talked about it before, he's found kind of an infinite money glitch within the market. And like, nobody wants to believe it, I think. So over the past year, let's see. Let's go back to, what is this, December 25th. They were selling for $67.48 a share. They hit a high of $471.83 a share back in November. And it's funny, too, because you see.
So that's a $400 drop since then?
Well, no. That was, so whenever I was talking about December 27th, that was 2023.
2023. Okay.
Yeah, they started at $68.79. They went up to, on November 24th, 2024, or November 19th, 2024, it went up to $473.83.
Jeez. That's some serious gains right there.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride, but it's funny because what he does, and it's, if you watch the stock, this is what they do. They wait for the stock valuation to get super high. Then they sell off shares of their stock.
They basically depress their own shares by selling off so much that they can buy ridiculous amounts of Bitcoin.
Correct. Yeah. And from what I understand, what he stated is that he's going to stop doing that with the stock itself. And he's going to just start doing more of those loans that he's been famous for doing, where he sells off bonds or whatever of the company and then buys more Bitcoin that way. But yeah, so they sell off their outstanding shares and then buy up more Bitcoin, and then it's kind of crazy how he's been able to do that. And you know, I mean, Wall Street's watching this and they're like, no, this, you can't do this. And he's like, what are you going to do? Like, you have to do something to Bitcoin in order to affect his stock, which, I mean, Bitcoin is volatile, but I don't know, man. Don't know.
No, I don't know. No, it's kind of crazy, especially with Trump taking office and being a much more pro crypto, at least outwardly pro crypto president.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting what happens going forward, because I think that's one of the things that the lows of the lows, I mean, they were going after real exchanges like Coinbase, and they were just creating problems all across the board. And then FTX happened. They left FTX alone because that was like their main donor, and that really crushed everything. So It's just it was a really weird cycle with the Biden administration.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think it's kind of interesting, you know, talking about that with the FTX thing. There's been rumors that Biden may pardon Sam Bankman-Fried. I don't know. Well, I mean, it's rumors until it actually happens. But
well, he commuted the sentence for a Kids for Cash judge that was basically getting paid money to send them to the local institution, even if they didn't have any problems.
Really?
So, I mean, comparatively, I mean, I'm not saying Sam Bankman-Fried didn't destroy some lives with, you know, people invested with him, but that's next level evil. Sending kids to some institution and then they basically come out ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah. Commute his sentence. So, I mean, in comparison.
Yeah, like that's nothing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's nothing, but it's like, hey, man, he's done worse already. So, and he's still got another 3 or 4 weeks in there to do some more. So,
yeah. No, that's true. One of the other things that kind of hampered the price of Bitcoin, looks like, and I mean, this is all rumor and speculation anyways. I mean, there was nothing that was guaranteed, but it looks like, Japan has opted not to, they slowed down any type of reserve that they were attempting to do with Bitcoin, citing lack of information and volatility. So, you know, there was a lot of hype that was going into, I think, kind of the last few weeks of December, where everybody was talking about how, you know, what countries are buying Bitcoin, you know, and there still very well may be nation states purchasing that we're not aware of. I've heard rumors out of Dubai. I think a lot of people have heard that kind of thing. But then, like Jerome Powell, when he gave his Fed meeting minutes, when he was talking about how the Fed cannot hold Bitcoin as a reserve asset unless there's a law change by Congress. You know, that was one of the things that kind of bothered me about that, was that I think a lot of people took that as, well, then Trump can't do a Bitcoin strategic reserve.
Right.
And that's not true, right?
Right. And that's kind of confusing to most average people because they don't even know what the Federal Reserve is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two parts that we have. The Treasury is part that's controlled by the federal government. And the Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the federal government. It's a private central bank that issues our money and credit and all that other stuff. So, a private monopoly bank, I should say, you know. I would definitely like to have the keys to the kingdom when it comes to printing money and setting interest rates. I'm pretty sure I could have all sorts of fun and make all sorts of profits. I mean, you guys may not do so well, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, no, the Federal Reserve, this is what the Bitcoin was originally created for, was basically to counteract all the central banks where they just print money out of nowhere. So you think the Federal Reserve wants to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon and basically grab the thing that's supposed to destroy them?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's like putting their own head in the noose for them, right?
Right.
And I think that's one of the things. And maybe, you know, maybe we should focus a little bit more on this. Like, there's a lot of people, there's probably a lot of people now, especially because this happens every bull market. A lot of people are new to Bitcoin. They don't understand how the ebbs and flows of Bitcoin. They don't understand why Bitcoin is what it is, what makes it great, you know, how it's a payment structure. Plus, it's, you know, the fiduciary machine all in one package. Like, it's everything all in one. A lot of people don't realize that. And a lot of people don't understand the, you know, why Bitcoin kind of arose. I mean, Bitcoin's been around for a while now. They forget some of the stuff that happened in 2008 when kind of Bitcoin kind of emerged. And I think it's important to know that that's the reason. Yeah, you brought it up already. Like, that's the reason why Bitcoin was created.
Yeah. I mean, just a brief lesson on what happened in the end of 2008. The banks crashed and then they ramrodded through, you know, bailouts for all the banks, the big banks, and at the expense of, you know, Main Street versus Wall Street. And that's kind of the impetus for the white paper coming out and its adoption.
Yeah. Yeah. It was basically to remove that. When you look at the Fed and you talk about, well, we're waiting to find out what their meeting minutes is. Are they going to raise interest rates? Are they going to lower interest rates? Like, we have no idea what the Fed's going to do from one day to the next, right? Or from one meeting to the next. They can't say one day. But,
yeah,
I mean, technically, it's still like even a day because they can come out and do an emergency session and do whatever. But Bitcoin, you know exactly. We know exactly what's going to happen with Bitcoin until the final Bitcoins are mined.
Yep.
We know what that schedule looks like. So it just basically takes that power out of the corrupt hands of people and puts it in mathematics, where it's unbiased. It doesn't care what your political views are or anything like that. It does what it's going to do when it's going to do it. You're either along with it or you're not.
Right.
It doesn't care about your feelings. And I mean, one of the things that people take for granted is that they think, okay, well, if the Fed can't have that strategic Bitcoin reserve, well, then Trump can't do anything. And that's not true. The Treasury is separate.
Uh-huh.
The United States Treasury is its own separate entity because the Treasury is actually a United States federal government thing.
Yes.
The Fed is a privatized central bank.
Which the mislabeling there and the confusion is not on accident.
Yeah. they meant for it to sound like it's part of the government, right?
Right.
I mean, Jerome Powell even said Trump can't fire him.
Well, you know, we'll see. There's a lot of weird things with the Federal Reserve and banking in general.
There's a book that you turned me on to that you probably should recommend to people if they haven't read it before.
What's that?
The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yeah. 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 That was a good one. Actually, I need to go get it because J. Edward Griffin is still alive. He's like got to be close to 100 now.
Did he revise it again?
Yeah. They have some special edition now. Well, I read my dad's copy, but it was very interesting.
Yeah, I probably heard him. It was a more revised edition than that one that you had probably originally read.
Yeah.
And then after that, then you go buy the Bitcoin Standard and read that one.
Yes. But another thing that's happening with the Federal Reserve is this is brought up by Mark Andreessen with Operation Chokepoint 2.0, but they were debanking a lot of Silicon Valley people involved with crypto. And I actually got to hear an interview with somebody who lives in Silicon Valley that has like a bank where they actually have 100% reserves. So you don't lend it, you don't give them your money and they lend it out. They actually hold it.
Yeah.
And then they also would hold custody for keys. And I need to also share that episode sometime with you, Hans, because it was very enlightening.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good one. And I'm sure they got attacked.
Oh, yeah. No, they were part of the Operation Chokepoint 2.0. And basically, the people that were attacking them were within the Federal Reserve. Like, they started rolling this out, you know, back a couple of years ago. And she was saying that the open secret in Washington is the deal that was cut for Elizabeth Warren to endorse Joe Biden was he gave her complete control of the financial systems. That's why it's so left-wing. She's in charge of the SEC, you know, the banking and all that stuff. Elizabeth Warren is actually running the show.
That's so crazy.
Yep.
Oh, and speaking of, one last thing I kind of wanted to bring up. We had talked about this before was El Salvador with the IMF loan. They did accept it.
Did they accept the loan?
Yep. El Salvador has struck a $1.4 billion deal with the IMF after agreeing to scale back its controversial Bitcoin policies.
I wonder what Max Kaiser thinks about that.
Yeah, I wonder how long he'll stay there.
Yeah.
Let's see. And that was kind of around the high when Bitcoin hit that 108 that it actually happened.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yep. So we'll see. I mean, they have to scale back some of the policies. I mean, it's not, I don't think they can, they just have to, I think they have to take away, required to take Bitcoin as payment. Now it has to be voluntary to take Bitcoin as payment. within the country.
Well, I'm for that as well. I think legal tender is kind of BS. Legal tender laws should be able to pay people whatever they want to accept.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you want to accept my feet pics, then hey, man.
Hey, man.
I'm not going to block you.
I got a petty here recently, so.
So last thing, this is kind of going to probably be our last show before the end of this year. That doesn't mean that we won't record soon, but what do you think we're looking at for the end of the year? Price for the end of the year, for year end?
I don't think it's hitting 100. I don't think we're going below 90. So that's my range.
You'll be maybe range bound in there?
Range bound. I don't even know if it'll go below 92, really. If it goes below 92, that's actually when I do get scared.
Yeah, there's been a lot of support. Like, I'm looking at the charts here, and it looks like 90,000 was a pretty strong pressure point. Looks like 92, looks like it's been holding pretty steady there. And then it looks like 93 was the most recent touch point and then bounced right back up. So, yeah, I think there's probably a lot of support in the $92,000 range, like what you're talking about. And then obviously right now we have a ceiling at 100,000 that we've just bounced off of. So we'll see. So you think less than 100 from the end of the year. And so somewhere between 92 to 100, I think I can't disagree with you. Normally I'm more bullish than you are, but I don't know. I'd be kind of interested to see if Bitcoin tries to end the year at 100 grand. We'll have to kind of see what Monday and Tuesday hold next week. But I would like to see it close that 2024 above 100,000. So I'm going to say if we do eke it, it's going to be like $101,000 from the year end.
Yeah. No, if it does, it's going to be very, very small. It's not going to blow to 110.
No. No, I don't think we'll see it reclaim 108,000 before year end. Unless there's some crazy announcement that's like come like between Monday and Tuesday, basically. Cause after that, like Wednesday, we'll have a little bit of action, but then markets will be closed on New Year's Day, I'm pretty sure. So, so cycle wise, do you think we've topped? Do you think we still have more to go?
I don't think we've topped. I'm not like 100% certain on that. I've been saying the Biden administration has been pretty terrible for the economy, and they're just gaslighting us. So when we start uncovering, digging up this graveyard, we're going to find a whole lot of skeletons. And I don't know, it could spook the market to really take that nosedive. And if the market in general takes a nosedive, so is Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So I don't think so, but it's possible. I still think we've got at least until, I think the bull run, historically speaking, should last another 6 months.
Yeah.
At least.
I would say 6 to 9 months at least is still what we have ahead of us. But
yep. 9 months is more realistically, I'm saying 6 months is the minimum of what I would expect it to run.
Yeah, I would say if you were one of those that was looking to take profits, I would say 6 months is kind of the window in which you'd probably want to find that high during that time that you'd want to sell, and then not try and push your luck to go for that extra 3 months later, you know? Because that double top scenario where, yeah, it does. There's this one last run up, but when it makes that last run up, it's going to have that blow off top and crazy sell off. So, yeah, I think I tend to agree with you on that. So, I don't think we're done yet. I think a little bit of a break, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing. That's the other thing we've talked about that before too, is that this isn't uncommon for bull markets to have a bit of a pullback. Everything kind of just calm down and start to run back up again. If we can keep within that $90,000 range, like what you're talking about, I think that's a good, solid floor that we're building.
Yeah.
So, anything else you want to add?
Just think, a few months ago, say before November, you said, hey, the floor of resistance is 90 grand. You'd still be pretty happy.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it would seem kind of dismal that we would hit 100 grand for, during the summer, especially. It was like, oh, we're not going to hit 100,000 before the end of the year. And we did. I would like to see us close above 100,000 for the end of the year, but we'll see where it goes.
Absolutely.
So I just want to say Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody. I hope you got to spend some time with some family and some friends. And yeah, that's really all I've got.
Sayonara 2024.
Amen. We'll see you in 2025.
All righty.